We are all a mixture of good and bad, evil and divine, black and white. We are all gray. The white, the divine are the saints, the prophets. They're at one extreme, and then at the other extreme are the rakshasas, the people who are incorrigibly evil, the criminals, the drug addicts, the drug dealers. So Krishna is not addressing this chapter either to the saints or to the out and out criminals. This chapter is for people like us, for you and me, who are somewhere in the middle of the spectrum. We are not extremely saintly and we are not extremely criminal, thank God. And a very sharp contrast is shown between the two groups. The people who are the suras, the godly people, the divine people, and the asuras, the not so divine. The idea being that let me look within myself, let me evaluate myself and see where do I fit in. And, you know, there is a middle of the spectrum, and then there is the one extreme which is, you know, the evil, and the other extreme which is good, but I'm somewhere in the middle, and my goal of life should be to slowly direct my life this way upward towards the divine, towards, and that's why studying the lives of saints, I find for me personally, is very inspiring. When you just read the life of Mirabai or Tukaram or Sant Gyaneshwar or Jesus, see what all they went through and how firm their faith was in the Lord and in themselves. And it's a very inspiring. So I always myself read, and I encourage people, read the lives of saints, you know, Saint Francis. You will get so much inspiration, and you will see how these people who were ordinary human beings, a lot of them were married, had families, and still were able to turn their direction of their mind upwards. So that is the purpose of this chapter, because Krishna is telling us that look within yourself and see how many of the divine qualities I have. That's why the first three verses talk about the divine qualities. The daivik sampad, sampadi, that sampad, that's what Krishna calls it, daivik sampad. And, you know, like abhayam, ahimsa, sattva, samshuddhi, you know, purity of mind and so on. And then the fourth verse, he talks about the some of the wrong qualities like dambha, darpa, you know, arrogance, ego, pretentiousness. And then the rest of the verses in this entire chapter goes into more detail on the people who are not so divine, not don't have all the divine qualities, and so it's addressed to us. And the idea is not to read this chapter and say, you know, yeah, that is true, in the world there are so many terrorists, so many criminals, yeah, that is true, but where am I on the spectrum and how can I change my life? So that is the purpose, and that's why this, it's for introspection. The entire Bhagavad Gita is for introspection, not for looking outside and pointing at people, but for myself, how can I improve? So let us continue the 16th chapter. We have two very, very good verses, which we'll cover today. Last week, we had talked about the people who are asuri or not divine. They do not know what is pravritti, they do not know what is nivritti, they do not know what to do and what not to do, they do not have any idea about where the world originated from, they do not know when I should work, when I should withdraw, when should I speak, when should I not speak. So not having any idea, how do they function in the world? That is expanded more by the Lord in verse number 8. So chapter 16, verse number 8. Asatyam apratishtham te.
Asatyam apratishtham te.
Jagadahuranishwaram.
Jagadahuranishwaram.
Aparasparasambhutam.
Aparasparasambhutam.
Kimanyat kama haitukam. So what they say, jagat, this world, ahu. So these people say, ahu, they, this is the plural, they say what? This world is asatyam. There is no truth. There is no truth. and apratishtham, and there is no substantial basis, there is no support, there is no morality in this world, and anishwaram, and there is no God. They don't believe in the existence of God. So how did the world come to creation? You say, well, if there is no God, you know, the Bible says, the Gita says that there was a Bhagwan, Lord, who created this. How did this world come into being? They say, aparaspara sambhutam. Just with the union of male and female, man and woman, that's how this whole creation goes on. Look at it, plants. They also multiply, you know, stamen and pistil. Look at animals, look at birds, look at fish, look at humans. All creation is male and female. Why do we need a God? Okay, then why did this happen? Kim anyat kama haitukam. What are the reasons? Just for lust. Just for lust, this whole world is created. So that is their thinking. It's very, very interesting. And the way they talk seems very logical. It's interesting. This, it's not only now. Nowadays people say there is no need for God or morality. People say that. There is no God. There is no truth. There is no morality. There's only sex. And you will see that in so many magazines. You go to the supermarket, you pick up a magazine, that's all it will talk about. But it's interesting, even 8,000 years ago, the same, exact same, you know, it's like he's describing what is happening today. And even in those times, even in Krishna's times, even in Ram's times, even in the time of Jesus, there were people whose thinking was wrong, who were evil, who were corrupt. They used to call them charvakas. Char means pleasant speech. So these people are very logical. When they talk, they speak very pleasant, they speak very logical, but their thinking is so flawed, but they live their life according to this principle, according to this idea. So let us spend a little time talking about what this verse means or how these charvakas used to think, and which even modern, if you look at the communist world or look at the modern materialistics, you know, who believe in wealth and property and power, they say we don't need God. You know, who has heard of God? So let us talk about it. So they say there is no truth, no substance. There is no support to this world. What is the world? Is a continuity of events. Like there is one philosophy, they call it Kshanika Vijnana. That means what? The world is constantly created and destroyed, created and destroyed, created and destroyed. And they say that's how this world is. So they say, but isn't there a continuity? No, there is no continuity. What is the need? You say, but then how do I remember? You know, I remember my childhood, then I remember my youth, then I remember my middle age. Now I'm getting old, I remember all that. If I was not, there was not a constant factor, how do I remember all this? And then you say, you know, the human body, every 7 years, it gets completely destroyed and a new body is created. If a new body was created, and you say that I'm only matter, that we are, you, they say you are only matter. You are not anything but matter. Matter is born, it is created, it is destroyed. The world, the human body is only matter. I am as much matter as this table. There's no difference between the table and me. They say, but how do I remember? Or how do I, what is, or why do I have life? They say life is nothing but a subtle form of matter, that's all. And so that's all. That's why you are alive, because you are not as gross as this table. That's the only difference between. You have this subtle form of matter. You can call it energy. You can call it subtle matter. And matter and energy are interchangeable anyway. You know, Einstein proved that E equals MC squared. So matter and energy are. So that's all. You are a mixture of matter and energy. And energy is life. And that is all that matters. You know, nothing else matters. It's only that. As long as the body, the matter can sustain itself, the person lives. When the body is incapable of sustaining life, but I still remember from childhood, so I must have been there. There must be a constant factor. Like Gurudev says in his commentary, like there has to be a screen to show the movie. The movie is changing, but there has to be a substratum called a screen on which the movie is being projected. Or there has to be a bed constant bed on which the river can flow. River, if there was not a solid bed, if it was just mud, the river would disperse. No, but the river has a bed on which it flows. So there has to be a constant factor called truth or Atman or consciousness. Say, shut up, don't waste my time. You know, let's go to the bar, pick up a beer and watch some football. Why are you, you know, wasting your time just thinking about things that do not need to be thought about? Is there any use of knowing this substance? How does it help you? Does it help you to earn more of a dollars? No. Will it help you to get a promotion in your job? No. Will it help you to have fun in life? No. Don't waste your time. There is a lot. Life is complicated enough, and then you are putting another complication called truth or forget it. You know, just live the life. You know, life is short. You are only here for 60, 70 years. Instead of wasting time thinking about God and all, khao piyo maja karo, mauj udao. You know, kya, what is the meant in life? There is nothing else left. So that is their thinking, that nothing is substantial, nothing is continuous, nothing is concrete. There is no substratum, there is no support. And then asatyam, and then they say apratishtam. There is no need for morality. Because why do I practice morality? Because I have an inner voice of conscience, right? They say, but why should I practice morality? I just do what is good for me. If I say, you know, you should help others, you are here to help others. He say, if I'm here to help others, then what are others here for? What are they doing? If I'm just going to go around helping, then it's just wasting my time. It's me and myself. They say, no. There is, you know, there is a conscience, there is an Atman. These people don't even have a voice of conscience because their mind is so noisy that either they don't have the conscience or they have drowned it out. And anyway, they say, who believes in this Atman? You know, that there is an Om or Atman or Self. They say, can it be objectified? Can you see it? Can you show me God in a test tube? You say, there is God everywhere? Okay, show it to me in a test tube. If you show me God, then I'll believe it. There is God. Or you say, there is Atman or soul or consciousness? Sure, produce it. If it's everywhere, why can't I see it? If I can't see it, it doesn't exist. If I can't hear it, then you tell a person, you know, I cannot see your brain. Does that mean you don't have a brain? No. Just because I don't see anything or I don't see your emotions, does that mean you don't have? But their idea is, if I cannot see, hear, smell, taste and touch, it doesn't exist. So they live totally on the senses. And when you tell them God is not an object, it is a subject. The Atman, the Self, the consciousness cannot be objectified. You cannot put an Atman in a box or a test tube. It is the subject which knows everything. Because of the Atman, I know. I know my eyes, I know what I see, I know my thoughts, I know my emotions, I know my desires, my vasanas, my thoughts, my emotions, they are all my bodily functions. They are all known because of the consciousness, which is the ultimate subject. Nothing can know this consciousness, because the consciousness or Atman or Brahman or God, whatever you want to call it, is the ultimate knower, they say, that is all bunk. That is all bakwas. You know, some prophet, that's why they call their organization non-profit. Means there is no prophet, not non-profit. Some prophet, you know, sitting somewhere in a cave, had nothing better to do, or some Mahatma or some Rishi. He was frustrated, he didn't have anything in the world, he was, you know, poor. So he just created this so just to make us also miserable, so that we don't practice religion. I mean, we don't have fun. Religion is just meant to scare us. So you're all the time scared, you know, there will be a God and he will punish you. And there will be heaven or hell. You know, he talks about God or heaven or hell. Has anybody gone to heaven and come back and told you that he went to heaven or anybody went to hell? All these masters and these so-called prophets, they have nothing else to do but sit down and write these books, which are just their fanciful. They had nothing better to do, sat down one day and composed it, and now they are making all of us miserable. Bible is telling us, the Ten Commandments, and Gita is giving us these values, and Buddha sat down somewhere under a tree. He had nothing better to do for 10-15 years. He sat down and came up with these theories, and which we are now suffering. So that is what they are thinking. Their senses only, and they say life is meant to be enjoyed. What gives you fun is merit. If you suffer, that is sin. If you have money, this world is heaven. If I have money, I can create heaven. I can buy anything. I can go to Hawaii. I can go to the Bahamas. I can buy a big house. And if I have don't have money, it is hell. So heaven and hell is right here. If you have money, you are rich, you are happy. You tell them there are so many millionaires who are drug addicts, who are committing suicide, and who are on... don't talk to me about that. Money is everything. And you want to enjoy, have fun. All this celibate and all, you know, control and self-control and all is because these guys were frustrated. They're talking about celibate. There's a very interesting story. It's a very funny story. So there was this cult, lived somewhere in the mountains in one corner of the world, and there were several thousand of them, and there was this their head priest. And his rule was that if you join this cult, you have to be celibate. That means men and women have to live separately, even husband and wife. They had to separate. So they had different quarters. They couldn't mingle. They couldn't meet at all, you know, have lectures. And then he would make them practice all the, you know, asanas, yoga, and whatever, you know, teachings. But total celibacy. So they say, where is it written that you should be celibate? He said, it's written in the book. See, the book says celibate. So they said, okay. So one of the young priests came in, you know, he joined, and he said, but this is a printed copy, you know. Where is the original where it says? He said, you don't need to waste your time. God says we should be celibate. So all have to be celibate. So nobody can practice any contact with the opposite sex. So, okay. So he kept on living for a few years. He said, but I want to see the original book where it is written. He said, don't waste your time. I'm telling you, it is written there to be celibate. He said, no. Can I please go? He kept on bugging the head priest. So he said, one day he said, okay, go ahead. Here's the key. This is the ancient books. You keep going there and search. It will take you months. You'll never find it. It's such a difficult. I don't know where it is. Even I haven't seen it. My teacher told me that, and his teacher told him, and it's written there. This priest was inquisitive. So he kept on doing research. After a few weeks and months, one day he went deep into the tombs of the vault of the books. And he went there, and for 3-4 days he never came out. And the head priest was worried, you know, what happened to this guy? You know, normally he goes in the morning, does research and come back. He's gone for 3-4 days. So he says, let me find him. So he takes a light, and it was so dark, flashlight, and he goes, and he finally in the extreme corner, way in the back where all the books are, he finds him there, and he's crying. The priest is crying. He said, what happened to you? Why are you crying? He said, they forgot the R. They forgot the R. What do you mean they forgot the R? No, they forgot the R. Whoever copied it says, why? He says, it says celebrate, not celibate. Celebrate. He said, God says celebrate. And for all these years, you guys have all been suffering, and I have been suffering. So the point is that these people, they don't believe in all this self-control. They say just enjoy life. There are no consequences, you know. No consequences in life. Life is just a combination of male and female. How did the world come into existence? Male and female got together, they multiply. Why is the population gone to 7 billion? Because people are multiplying. If God was doing it, why can't he control the population? Why is he allowing people just to breed, you know, totally like that? So they just deny that there is any morality. They deny that there is any consciousness. They deny any substratum, any truth to this world. There is no truth. It is just matter. Two pieces of matter get together. And then that's what they say. And why did the world multiply? Because of lust. That's all. Lust alone is there. That only thing sells. Sex alone sells. And if you look at the modern TV and all, that's all it is, right? They want to sell a new burger. What do they show? A girl, you know, with minimal clothes, you know, eating the burger. They want to sell a car. It's a girl wearing no clothes or minimum clothes, sitting in a... Anything they want to sell, it is all based on this lust, because that is all they feel, that is all important. You know, if you want to buy a house, anything, if you look at advertising, it is all based, not only that, but all the movies, all the books, all the songs, everything is based around that. Where is the morality? Where is the honesty and truthfulness and the good values in life that are really important? Nobody talks about them. I'm not trying to make it a unhappy or a miserable talk, but what we have to do is look and see whether I am contributing to that. Am I being a positive influence in this world, or am I being a negative influence? Am I living my life according to moral principles and trying to go towards sainthood, or am I deteriorating? And that is the whole purpose of this talk. And then nowadays we find that, you know, with all these new medicines, I know Sanjay, this pharmacist, no, I mean, you can have your, you know, pleasures until 70 years old, 80 years old. There are these men, and there are all these ads about Viagra and all, and they are selling like anything. That's becoming the number one drug. And there is a purpose why these pranas were meant to be reduced, because how the nature intended for us, okay, you have to procreate till, you know, age 50 or whatever, and once your procreation time is over, then it is time for the pranas, they all automatically start diminishing. The powers, the energy within us reduces, and the purpose of that is that whatever limited energy you have, you know, when I was 20 or 30, you could, you know, lift more weight, you could run, you could climb mountains. And as you get older, you find you can't do those things. So instead of trying, and people say, oh, I wish I could be a teenager again. Why do you want to wish to be a teenager again? Enjoy what you have, and whatever pranas, whatever energy limited you have, use that for self-growth. Use that to become a better individual. Use that for your spiritual growth, to go towards Lord. And that is the whole purpose why your body has now become weaker, so that you don't indulge or enjoy. You don't need to just uselessly travel or uselessly just waste your time. Your time is limited. You know, none of us is going to live forever. Your energy is limited. So use the time and energy for personal growth. Use it for spiritual growth. And conserve your pranas, and don't waste them in late night parties and, you know, things like that. They all drain you. So if you have extra time, use that for your own growth. Use that to help others. Use that. Time is limited. Our energy is limited. Our abilities are limited. Our physical capabilities are limited. So use that to help the world, to make the world a better place. And think that, what is it that is supporting this universe? What is it that is, you know, in the Dakshinamurti Srotram, it says, Balya Dishvapi Jagrada Dishu Tatha Sarvasu Avasthasu Api Vyavrittasu Anu Vartaman Ahamiti Antas Furantam Tada. He says, from childhood to youth to old age, there is an I, which is shining, and which is also there in the waking, dream, and deep sleep states. In the waking state, I am there. In the dream state, I am there. In the deep sleep also, I am there. Not as I, as this ego, but I am the consciousness is still there. I am still alive. So pay attention to that. And that is your true I. That is who you really are. You are that spirit. People say, I am this body and I have a spirit in me, or I say, I am this body and I'm looking for a spiritual experience. They say, no, you are the spirit and you are undergoing a physical experience. It is a difference. You say, I am this body, but I'm looking for a spiritual experience. I'm looking for God, or I'm looking for some chamatkar, you know, I'm looking for some miracle to happen. No, you are not a body looking for a spiritual experience. You are a spirit who is undergoing a physical experience, and you are occupying this body, and your name is Kusum or Anil or Satish or whatever your name is, whatever your male or female, short or tall, Indian or American. These are all your dresses, your clothes, your external appearances. So pay attention to the consciousness and always be aware of that, and always follow the religious principles, because the truths of morality, the truths of justice and fair play and compassion will give you more joy. But people say, there is no morality, there is no truth. I'll talk about that, you know, later on, about the lack of morality. But they live life without consequences. They don't think about consequences. The example I was reading in one of the commentaries, like you send your daughter to college, right? So what do? You give her a credit card so she can shop without worrying about the consequences. Why? Because dad is going to pay. So she can buy whatever she wants. She doesn't have to think about consequences. Then you give her a birth control pills. You know, you're going to college, my child. So you can indulge without fear of pregnancy. So you give her that. Then you buy her starch blockers so she can eat whatever she wants without worrying about consequences. And soon science will come up with alcohol blockers so you can drink without fear of. So you, and then guilt, you know, you may have guilt. They'll come out with a pill for guilt so you have no fear. So life will be without any consequences. But such an individual who has lived her or his life without worrying about consequences, without, you know, no self-control, then what happens to her when she's faced with problems in life? You know, boyfriend problems or school problems, or if she gets a job, then work problems. These such people are not equipped to handle the world, because they bodily, they may have, you know, enjoyed the life, but mentally they are very weak because they have not learned to face the consequences of life. They have not lived a life of control, how to control my money, how to control my indulgences, how much I should sleep, how much I should study. So those things we don't teach our children. And so when they have lived a life without thinking of consequences, then what happens? Then when they are faced with stress in life, then they say, oh, dad, come and help me. Dad is not going to go with you forever. He's not going to go with you to your work. So when you have problems in school and college and job and all, then such people realize that how they have lived their life without regard of the consequences. So we have to teach our children, you know, the principles of morality, the principles of honesty, truth, justice, hard work, and being self-reliant, self-dependent. And so this comes only when they have the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, they have the knowledge of the scriptures. That's what we inculcate in Bal Vihar in our children. We try to teach them the values, the principles in life, because without that, your life is like without a rudder, you know, just as a boat that doesn't have a rudder, which has no direction. It can go anywhere, you know, depending on the current. So that is how our life becomes. So that is what these people say, that is how they live their life. And how should be my relationship with God? And the most perfect example you can find is Hanumanji. And in the end of Hanuman Chalisa, Tulsidas ji says, Ram Lakhan Sita Sahit Hridaya Basahum, you know, Surabhup. So he says, stay in my heart, Hanumanji, along with Ram, Lakshman, and Sita ji. Bring all of them. Don't only come yourself. So why does he ask for all four? And I was trying to think about it. So let us see what each one represents. Ramchandra ji, of course, is the Lord himself. So you want the Lord. The Lord is in every one of us. But we don't remember that. We forget. So let me remember that Ramchandra ji is in my heart, or Jesus or Krishna or Shiva or whatever, with whoever form of God you worship, is with me at all times. So I should make my actions divine. Then he says, why Sita ji? Why should I have Sita ji? Because Sita ji had total unconditional love for the Lord. She didn't say, oh, as long as you are in the palace, you know, I'll live with you. When you're going to the forest 14 years, you're on your own. Sorry. I'll see you back in 14 years. No, she didn't say that. Some modern woman might have, I don't know. But she said, no, you are going to the forest for 14 years. I am going with you. It doesn't matter. He even told her, he said, look, you are a princess. And I brought I told your father, I will always take care of you. I promise, Janak Maharaj. And now in the forest, I'm going to make you suffer 14 years. He tried his best to dissuade her, you know, but she didn't. She said, no. My place is with you. So I should love God like Sitaji loves God. So I should have the same love in my heart for the Lord like Sitaji. So I should have Sitaji. Why Lakshman? Lakshmanji was the embodiment of Vairagya, of dispassion and sacrifice. He had no reason to go with Ramchandraji. Okay, Sitaji was married to him. Other brothers didn't go. Why did he have to go? Actually, Bharat wanted to go and they all wanted to go. But then Ramchandraji made them stay to take care of the kingdom. But Lakshmanji didn't have to go. He said, okay, you have been sent to the forest. No, he gave up his wife. He gave up his family. He gave up the palace. So total sacrifice. So like Lakshmanji, I should be willing to sacrifice anything for Bhagwan, for my spiritual growth, for my principles, for the Lord. I should be ready to sacrifice anything. And then why Hanumanji? Because there is no greater bhakta. There is no greater devotee than Hanumanji. Hanumanji was Brahma Jnani. He had the highest knowledge. He was not only, people think, oh, he was the monkey. No, he had Brahma Jnani. He was had the total knowledge of the Upanishads. Everything he knew, he had studied. On top of that, he had so much power that he could lift mountains and he could change his form. And despite having so much knowledge and so much power, he had zero arrogance. Absolute, the embodiment of humility, the embodiment of service. Anything he says is required. You know, he says, Sukshma Rupa Dhari Siyai Dikhava Bikata Rupa Dhari Lanka Jara. He says to become small, he was ready to become a mosquito when he had to go see Sitaji. He was ready to do the smallest job. And then when he had to do a big job to fight the demons, he did that. When he was sent to bring the mountain and lie Sajivan Lakhana Jiyai, he brought even the mountain. So the point is that he did everything, but never anywhere anybody asked him, who are you? He said, I am Ram Dut. I am Ram Sevak. He never even said his name. That his name was that, I am a servant of the Lord. So the point is that these are the qualities I need to inculcate. I need to have the divine qualities of Ramchandraji, his devotion to his parents, his honesty, his truthfulness. I have to have the love of Sitaji. I have to have the sacrifice of Lakshmanji. And I have to have the service and humility of. So that is how one should live a life, not like the people I described earlier. The reason I did that, because I didn't want this to become a very depressing talk. Let us have at least some positive goal role model. So that is, but this whole chapter, if you read it, it's so, negative. But, that's the truth. That's how the world is. So I'll stop here. Any comments? Any questions?
The generations grew. How can we call that as a sin?
No, it's not a sin. It's definitely not a sin. I know they say we were created out of sin, Bible says, but I think sin, according to how Swami Chinmayananda defines it, sin is when you forget your true nature. See, I am that consciousness. So one has to always remember that. And I don't think procreation is a sin. That's how the generations will continue. So that's not a sin. But indulging or living a life of without moderation is a problem. But I think that is required. And of course, we are not saying that one should not have any pleasures in life. It does not mean you shouldn't go to a restaurant or you shouldn't travel or you shouldn't enjoy life. Life is meant to be enjoyed. You cannot be a miserable person. That like the celibate. Who was just suffering. But the point is that should not be my only purpose in life. They should not think that the world, how is the world created? Just, that there were some elements, that's how you ask them, how did the world come about? Scientists, they say all these matter was lying around. How was the matter there? Matter was always there. Who created? It was always there. And then what happened? And then by chance, the molecules got together. And the amoeba came. And then from the amoeba, it evolved. And from amoeba, it became two amoebas. And then it evolved to the fish. You say, from a monkey, then monkey to human. You say, how come some monkeys evolved and some monkeys? Oh, it's just by chance. So for them, there is no creator. There is no support. There is no sub. And so that's all they think. That is all important is sense pleasures. So that is the point. We're not saying that procreation is wrong, because obviously even plants to grow, They have to multiply, they have to procreate. So yeah, so that's not the idea. But if that alone is your goal, that senses only are my goal, that is the point, yeah. But that's a good question, thank you.
The quality of forgiveness.
Right.
It is listed.
Right. Yeah, I think because the interpretation of kshama, you're talking about kshama. Yeah, it can be, in Sanskrit, it can be translated as patience or as forgiveness. So he emphasized the patience. But in other parts of the Bhagavad Gita, Swamiji has talked about forgiveness. And he says forgiveness is where even the thought of that I'm forgiving should not be there. Even if the thought is there that I'm forgiving somebody, then you're still in that ego. But the spontaneous, you know, where I forget even, so that is. But other places he has addressed that. Here he talks more about kshama, dhriti. But in his commentary, in his oral commentary, he does mention that.
So it does boil down. How do we relate it together?
Well, you know, the way I answer, if you say that it's by chance putting together, I say, well, you know, if you have a empty ground and you put cement and steel and bricks and wires, and will they suddenly by themselves get together and build a house by chance? It'll never happen. Even you leave it for a million years, it will deteriorate. So how can by chance these molecules come together and create this beautiful human being, which is so much more complicated than a house? So what they are saying is that whatever they can see is real. If I cannot see with a microscope, it doesn't exist. But there is a basic flaw. But any scientist, once they have evolved, I think a couple of weeks ago we talked about it, like Einstein, he became a great spiritualist in his later years because he said that this fantastic universe and these laws of relativity and quantum physics, there has to be a very powerful intelligence behind all this. It cannot just happen by chance. There is the whole how all the planets are maintained and how Halley's Comet comes once every 86 years. How does it know? It goes to travels for 86 years and billions and trillions of miles and then turns around and comes right back to the Earth. You know, 86 years later, and it is an inanimate object. You can say at least a bird, okay, it flies from here to South Pole and comes back. Maybe he has some instinct. But how does the Halley's Comet know the way and exactly it comes back to Earth in 86 years? There has to be a very powerful intelligence running all this. But, you know, they don't accept it. But any scientist worth his salt, once he really goes into the depth, even a biologist, when he sees this complex DNA, there are 4 billion cells, and how they are all coordinating, there has to be something, you know, controlling it. It cannot be just... So if they have any intelligence, they would see that.
Even the scientists would not be.
Right.
So it's extension of a similar idea.
Thank you. Go to verse number 9.